Penguin Random House Audio presents No Road Leading Back, an improbable escape from the Nazis and the tangled way we tell the story of the Holocaust, by Chris Heath. Read for you by Vass Eli. Prologue. On June 29, 2016, a story was published on page 4 of the New York Times under the headline, Escape Tunnel is Found at Holocaust Killing Site. Like most newspaper stories, it was notionally about something that had just happened, but at its root were events that had occurred over 70 years before. The article summarized how, at a place called Ponar, a Nazi extermination site, in a forest near Lithuania's capital, Vilnius, as many as 100,000 people had been shot and buried. It reported how, in a subsequent attempt to eradicate evidence of this mass murder, 80 Jews had later been brought to Ponar by the Nazis. At night, these Jews were imprisoned in a deep circular pit. By day, they were tasked with digging up and burning the bodies of all those previously killed here. The article further described how 12 of these Jewish prisoners had succeeded in escaping through a tunnel dug with nothing but their hands and spoons. What made any of this news in June 2016, and over the next few days, this story would be widely reported around the world in print, digitally, and on radio and TV, was the just-announced discovery of what the Times referred to as a forgotten tunnel. I remember being astonished, not just by the story, but by the fact that I'd never heard of the place where it all happened. In the weeks that followed, I looked into the story further. What had happened at Ponar was clearly no secret to anyone who had been paying attention. The basic facts had been known even before the end of the Second World War, and any reasonably comprehensive history of the period offers at least a passing overview. But it became clear that this particular story had rarely been focused upon. If you looked hard enough, you could find fragments of the Ponar narrative speckled here and there over the last 70 years, in disparate languages, cultures, contexts, places, forms, voices, and media. But more often than not, these fragments existed at the edge of other stories, half hidden in the far corner of vision, forever there but not there, slipping in and out of focus. I wanted to understand more. I wanted to understand better what had happened here, and increasingly, I also wanted to understand how and why what had happened here could have managed to slip the world by. I had yet to realize how impossible it might be to separate the two. In September 2016, I traveled to Hartford, Connecticut, to meet with Richard Freund, the professor at the University of Hartford, who had been instrumental in putting together the Lithuanian research project covered by the Times. He filled me in on his team's work and on some Ponar history, and he directed me to the two known English-language testimonies from people who had escaped through the Ponar tunnel. One in an out-of-print book, the other a transcript in a museum archive. The following month, I flew to Lithuania and visited Ponar. There, in a small museum on the site, visitors could study exhibits, photos, and short pieces of text offering some information and context. One panel gave a list of 12 names, the prisoners who are said to have escaped from Ponar via this tunnel on the night of April 15, 1944. Nearby were brief quotes from some of these escapees about what they had done. There was also a photograph of three of these men taken many years later, their hair now graying, sitting together on a sofa in an apartment in Israel, facing the camera, their arms around one another. On that first visit to Ponar, I wrote down this list of 12 names. I now had a plan. I resolved to tell, as best I could, the story of what had happened at this place, and in particular, to present whatever I could uncover about these men and their implausible escape. I would discover as much as I could about who they were and what became of them, tell the story of their tunnel, and also the story of its recent discovery. Everything that was possible to find out, I would strive to uncover. I had all sorts of ideas about what else this might achieve, but above all, I wanted to tell a gripping, visceral story of a barely believable series of events, a story that had somehow never been told in this way before. That was the book I set out to write. I did write that book, more or less. Its core sits within part one of this book. That central story, the story of what happened to these men at Panar in all its detail, turned out to be astonishing in ways far beyond anything I'd imagined. More brutal, too. I think I'd convinced myself that because the story of what happened at Panar would culminate in an escape, and so would become, at least for a few, a tale of survival, its telling would in some ways feel inspiring or uplifting. Perhaps at times it does. The narrative arc of what happened at Panar during the war certainly does build toward a moment of grand defiance. But I also soon realized that the overall truth of what these men experienced would be dishonored and stifled if I failed to show how the rare flashes of salvation that emerged only did so from an abominable darkness of almost inconceivable extent and depth. That was one way in which this book changed around me as I wrote it, but it was not the main one. In trying to tell the story I'd set out to tell, and in trying to understand what was true and to explain what I was discovering, I kept being dragged into another kind of narrative, one that I found at least as compelling. That was the story, or rather a whole daisy chain of related stories, about how the tale of what happened at Panar had, and hadn't, been told over the years, and the reasons why, and the unpredictable profusion of consequences. If I thought at the outset that the story of Panar was the story of how a premeditated Nazi plan to hide evil from history and the future had been thwarted through some acts of improbable resistance and bravery, I also came to realize that another important part of that story was about how all of this, both that plan and the heroic acts of defiance it inspired, had often been forgotten, or cast aside, or ignored, or misunderstood, or garbled, or suppressed. As I began to follow every tendril, wherever it led, I would repeatedly head off into what seemed like the remote distance, only to be led back toward the same story that had compelled me all along, about memory and honesty, history and barbarity, about forgetting and fragility and fallibility and resilience, about the unspeakable and the spoken, about heroism and shame, about the hazy line between misunderstanding and misrepresentation, about the power and frailty of storytelling itself, but most of all, always, about what actually happened at a place called Panar. That is why this book is in three parts. In part one, I tell the story of what happened at this place called Panar during World War II. Entwined within this story are the experiences of men who were there and who would escape through a tunnel to freedom. In this first part of the book, I pause to explain how I know what I believe to have happened only when it seems either strictly necessary or particularly useful. But it is crucial that the reader or listener should know that this is not the kind of historical nonfiction in which scenarios and conversations have been imagined to fill in the gaps between what was documented. All of the Panar escapees are now dead, but I managed to track down at least partial first-hand accounts from 9 of them, often multiple accounts by the same person, and every incident or quote or thought ascribed to one of the escapees comes from testimony that they or their fellow escapees gave when they were alive, or, in a few instances, was quoted by those who directly spoke with these participants. When there are obvious gaps in this story, it will generally be because no one spoke of what is not being said. These accounts were given in a variety of situations over a long time span, and they often involve events of the most extreme stress and trauma. And those bearing
sample complete. Ready to continue?